Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And when I say Armand Demel with The Positive Mind, it doesn't mean I have a positive mind. It means the name of the program is The Positive Mind. And what the idea of the program is to take a look at the world around us and to appreciate the beauty and to deal with that which deters from the beauty. You know, what takes us away. Hey, youth, bubbling youth. Beautiful thing about spring weather, you get out there and you see bubbles of youth. They are just popping all over the place and you can see the energy coming out. I was commenting the other day on how wonderful it is to be youth today as opposed to any time in the past. My guest with me today is Barbara Jessen, psychologist who works with teenage people, troubled teenagers. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
There you are.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us today is Stephanie Dombra, medical researcher, assistant, and therapist here at the center.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Armand.
The reason I have you both here today, and we also have Brian in the studio with us, who is another researcher, but we'll get to him a little later. Because we're talking about youth. We are talking about youth. We're talking about the youngins out there and what happens to them. You know, what is it like? You know, and it's kind of wonderful that teenage life is improving in so many ways. And, of course, with it come some more difficulties. But let's just think about the potential. Think about what it is to be a teenager today as it might have been different than 200 years ago, or what it's like to be a teenager in America today. As opposed to being a teenager somewhere else, what do we know? Barbara, what's the difference?
Well, I think the interconnectivity of youth nationally and internationally, that's a very new and very powerful influence through the Internet, through MySpace. Their identity and their interconnectivity are amazing.
So it's like, you know, somebody once said, Terrence McKenna once said, that there are mushrooms that are circling the globe up there on some low orbit, and that the mushroom spores are all connected, and that he believed that the mushrooms were communicating, that were our ultimate communication. That was just a concept that everybody kind of thought was silly, because we know they find mushroom spores in space. So, but here we now have the teenagers circling the globe, communicating with each other, seeing things on the internet, seeing things on television, being aware and conscious of things that go... I mean, just think about when you were a kid, Barbara.
Yes.
You grew up in Indiana?
Illinois, Northern Illinois.
Northern Illinois, mm-hmm. Which is pre-Chicago, right?
Well, it was a suburb of Chicago, so it was.
So you were still part of the city life, right? You weren't that far from
it. No, it was the suburbs. Yeah, but it was the suburban life.
Farm life?
No, but a suburb.
And when you were a kid, what was your potential? What was your potential for learning about what was happening in the world?
Oh, really limited. And connecting, there was no potential for connecting with other kids outside of my school and home environment. Not like today where they, you know, you mentioned, and another factor is communicating with each other. That's what they're doing. They're communicating. There's dialogue and interaction.
And there's constant dialogue and interaction. Now you have even cell phone, what do they call it? Text messaging, right? And when you text message, you're no longer just sitting by and thinking and waiting, and you could actually write notes to your friends all day long.
Yes,
and there's a constant communication going on. So one would think that that's a problem. The teachers look down and they see you text messaging and they want to, you know, have your fingers arrested. But the fact that it keeps the brain active in a different kind of way, you know, the fact that there's a different knowledge about the physical health of young people, of children, you know, that children are growing up on more nutritious diets. You know, they're having a little more physical well-being, more aware of exercise, more aware of the very foods that they eat all day long. cigarette smoking being eliminated and slowly getting eliminated, you know, and the consciousness about that, the unlimited capacity of a young person to learn and to exist, and the problems that existed that used to be just, you know, that's a bad child, it's a bad seed, they can't sit still, they can't, you know, they were no good in school. What are we learning about that, Stephanie?
Well, that you're talking, I think, about the attention deficit and hyperactivity. So
right.
That
yes,
specifically, it sounds like there's with the brain scanning and the imaging that's going on, this bursting of information with brain research, they're showing that the underactivity in a certain part of the brain. We've talked about certain sections of the brain, prefrontal cortex. That's an area of the brain where we use to focus, to concentrate. And nowadays, they understand that attention deficit is not a moral character flaw. It's an issue in your brain where there's underactivity of maybe dopamine and other parts of the brain. So it's not actually
they're finding a
negative. It's just, okay, we were born with this, and now we have to come up with a solution to help children. And it doesn't have to just be medicine. That's the beauty now, that we have so much information to help people, adults too, who have it.
Mm-hmm. So sticking with children, we're now working with certain things like adult the attention deficit disorder, which is called attention deficit disorder, which used to be called nervous, which used to be called restless, which used to be called a bad seed. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, when I couldn't pay attention in school, I felt bad. It made me feel stupid. You know, it made me feel like, you know, there's something wrong with me. And kids nowadays are getting a much better chance, a different look at this. What else do we understand, and what do we understand about hormones? And for that, we go to Barbara Jessen, who is dealing with this all day long because, well, tell them what you do, Barbara.
I'm the executive director of the United Methodist Youth Home in Evansville, Indiana. We have 4 group homes for teenage girls. So we get girls that are placed by the court because of abuse, neglect, truancy, running away, family problems, abandonment. We also have pregnant girls and teen moms who are placed with their young children. And so I'm working with the kids that are most troubled and most at risk and have had the most chaotic lives up till that point.
And up until now, there was no such thing. I mean, you know, you take troubled teens and they wound up in prisons.
Yeah.
Or homes for troubled teens,
right,
where the solution is discipline.
Yes, exactly. It was more a punishment model, and now it's hopefully moving toward a more understanding, at least in our facility, definitely in our facility, we use a more training model. The belief is that the children that I have not learned the skills they need to be successful adults, including learning the value of education, and so school is irrelevant to some of those kids, and that's what we're basically trying to do, is teach them those skills.
You know, as you listen to this, my friend, I want you to watch for your own reactions, because there's something about people listening with when they listen to stories about young people and teenagers, they sometimes don't want to hear it. A lot of it has to do with remorse about the past, because, you know, when we look back at our childhood, we wonder why we didn't get some of this good stuff that's going on today, number one. Number two, we tend to feel responsible when we hear stories about some of the difficulties out there. Like, let's just talk about teenage pregnancy and teenage babies, you know, and how many people have them. Just for your own information and doing my research, you know, the youngest person to ever give birth to a child was age 5. Age 5, Alina Medina, who in 1939 this was, she gave birth to a 5-pound boy, no less, and was done through cesarean birth. They tried to figure out if she was raped or something like that, and they said there was some kind of, it may or may not have been some other way that she fertilized, that the egg got fertilized, but she certainly had the capacity to have a baby at age 5. Now, didn't you have a case like that recently?
One of our girls was telling about her cousin who was age 7 at the first childbirth that that cousin had, and I'm not sure how valid that story is, but she was pretty insistent that her cousin was seven, so that's possible.
And of course, you know, there's all kinds of sexuality going around, but as we think about it, and we think about the different places in the world, we think about what how fortunate we are to be here in the center of a learning curve. You know, we have the information, and people like you, Barbara Jessen, who are understanding the thinking of the children who come to you. Now, you have pregnant girls.
Yes.
Are in the home.
And teen moms.
And teen moms.
Occasionally with two children or one child and another pregnancy.
Do they bring them up in your home?
Yes. The babies are living there with their moms.
How many babies? How many moms?
Right now we have two babies and two pregnant girls and then 16 or so other teenagers.
Okay, now what happens when the person has the baby and the babies are there for how long?
As long as the court keeps them, and that all depends on their family circumstance. If they have a parent or relative to go live with, they will do that. A large proportion of the girls that we have do not have a relative to go live with, so they're going to be there longer. Their options are more limited.
And here's where you run into that difficulty of people not wanting the information, right? You don't want, the locals don't want to know so much about your home.
Yes.
You know, it's like they don't want to even hear about it because a part of them would feel somewhat responsible. Under what condition or what is the condition of the average person who is directed to your home as a teenager? What condition are they in? Are they poor?
Yes. And their home life, their family life has always, each girl's family life has been chaotic in some way. There's often a family history of substance abuse. There are parents who have been or are in jail, parents who have died, sometimes of drug overdoses, parents who are absent. They're just not there. They're out of town. They're who knows where. Parents who are committed to things other than their children. So there's a lot of different possibilities, but it's always a chaotic life that these children have experienced.
So how would that child come to your attention?
Through the court. They're on probation because of running away or truancy, or they're under the auspices of the Department of Child Services, which is what it's called in Indiana, the welfare department, because of abuse or neglect.
Because of abuse, did they commit crimes?
The kids,
yeah.
Nothing, rarely anything beyond truancy or running away.
And what do they know about life? What do they know? They know street knowledge. They know what the other kids like them. So when they get into a home must be unfamiliar, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Now, in what way is it unfamiliar?
Well,
what they've never seen.
We've had girls who have never seen a toothbrush, which I think is kind of amazing to me. Kids with horrible decayed teeth because this is a 15, 16-year-old who has never had a toothbrush. And they didn't grow up in a rural, you know, isolated. They were in the city, but because of parental neglect, those needs weren't being taken care of. We have kids who don't have beds. They're sleeping on couches or the floor at home. And again, it's sort of startling because it's a Midwest medium-sized city that they're growing up in. Kids without electricity, just you name it. We have kids who are truant and come to us. This happened recently with nothing but the clothes on her back, and there were a lot of clothes at home. They were all piled around and all dirty. So this girl was a little bit lower functioning, so she does not have the means to have clean clothes, so therefore she was not attending school. She was there for truancy, but it was a much different and larger problem that she was trying to deal with.
So then one of these children who have never used a toothbrush, who don't know electricity, who sleep on floors and never change their clothing, wind up in the United Methodist Jessen home.
Yeah.
Right? They wind up in your place.
Yes.
And now you wash them up, you clean them up, you give them a bed, you give them a toothbrush, and it must make them so happy.
it does make them happy. They're not happy to be there. They're not saying, you know, the happiest day of my life was when I came there. No child wants to be in this situation. Every child wants a family, but they are.
But they don't even
secure.
Know what a family is.
Yeah. Well, they think they know, though, and they know what they want. But what we give them is security, because we have rules, we have adults supervising them, we have meals, we have someone getting them up in the morning and getting them on the school bus so they are going to school. We surround them with caring adults.
Well, I am sure that when you take somebody who has been deprived, it's like taking a feral animal and bringing it home. You know, if you have somebody who's been out there and been wild, and you try to bring it home, even though you want to clean it up and you want to take care of it, a part of it must yearn
yes.
for the relative freedom of the other way of being.
Or the familiarity of it.
Or the familiarity of it.
Yes.
Do you wind up with a rebellion at the beginning? Do they fight you?
Less and less. I've been the administrator for 9 years, so I've seen a pretty interesting evolution. And what we've been pretty much able to establish is a norm among the kids that are there. So when a new child comes in, there is resistance to that new child being rebellious. The other kids don't want to live in that chaos. They don't want someone who's running around shouting at the staff or throwing things or breaking things. So we've been able to develop some peer pressure to help reduce those problems. But kids vary, and we do get some that are rebellious.
Boy, another lesson from the dog whisperer. You don't know what that is, do you, out there?
Generally, yeah.
The dog whisperer?
Yeah.
We have a program, a movie program.
Oh, okay.
There's a TV series called The Dog Whisperer where...
Yeah, we get that out there in Indiana, too.
I tell you, it's worth watching because there are so many lessons in it on how to deal with people, because they just do it showing dogs. And they show when you have a bunch of wild dogs in a pack who have kind of calmed down, one of the ways of dealing with another wild dog is
yes.
to introduce them to the pack.
Right.
And the pack does not fight this person. They just won't give it any attention
right.
until it gets to a place where it is more calm. You know, and we're learning that there is a way of influencing children that doesn't require just discipline.
Right.
It's not discipline. It's not mocking. It's not yelling.
Right.
So how do the young teenagers deal with somebody who comes in who's not familiar with the home, the ones who have been there for 3 months or so and get the benefits? How do they deal with somebody who you bring in who's just a wild rebel?
What we used to see more so was that wild rebel would have followers in the home. It was because it was the familiar. You bring in a familiar leader, but we don't see that as much anymore. They do, I won't say shun the person, but they don't get sucked into that. They distance themselves, and that's very, very effective.
Do you think that this is the result of what you've learned about yourself and your own growth? And your own learning and ways of implementing things that may have changed over the 9 years that you've been there?
Absolutely.
What did you used to think?
I used to be much more rigid and controlling, and we had a lot more rules, and we've eased up on many of them and really focused more on empowering our girls rather than disciplining them. So we're trying to show them how they can be more successful in little ways. School is number one there. Getting an education is the key to success in our society. So in addition to our staff getting the girls up, giving them a hot meal, getting them onto the school bus, we have a licensed teacher who works not just helping the girls with their homework, but works closely with the school. So we're on top of things when they start to be problems. A major accomplishment for us was we had 5 girls on the honor roll at the end of last semester, which I was very...
The honor roll of what?
At school. At the end, their grades were B averages.
So
A
they go to schools
averages,
outside
the
of the home.
The public schools, yeah.
And they get on the honor roll.
Yes, yes. And that's what I mean by empowerment. We're trying to show... We are showing them you can accomplish this with help... With the help from adults, caring adults, you can accomplish this. We help them get jobs. We help them keep their jobs. We help them save money. It's pretty common for us to have a girl, and we had recently 2 girls who have been there about 8 or 10 months. They each had saved $3,000 for when they, on their 18th birthday, they left the home to live in their own apartment, surely the nicest apartment they've ever lived in, and they did it themselves. They furnished it, they found it, furnished it, and they have the income to maintain themselves and their child in that apartment. So that's what we're focused on now, is empowerment.
This is Armand DeMille. My guest is Barbara Jessen, executive director of a home for girls, but she is quietly becoming the teen whisperer. Yes, I think that you could probably get Barbara and bring her into any situation with youth and say, okay, what's going on here? And Barbara, with a little time, given a little time in the family, would help the family understand that there are things going on there that you wouldn't understand. You know, when you talk about Barbara, you talk about how I think most adults are going to eventually have to deal with, you know, bringing up a child or dealing with children that in later life. Last year alone, New York City had a baby boom. And there were just so many children being born, and everybody's walking around with a baby, or they're adopting babies.
Yes.
And it's baby land, you know? And nobody's ready for what comes next after the cute part. You know, after
and
the cute part.
You want to start bringing them up right then, too, when they're born. You don't want to wait till you have a teenager with a problem. You want to prevent the problem by starting back then.
And what do you start back then? What particular things do you look at? If you were the baby whisperer, I like this, we're developing a concept here. If you were the baby whisperer and you saw some mother who was having a baby and she was just a typical, you know, well, I'm just having a cute baby and we go buy them toys and if they cry, we hold them. And if they don't cry, we put them down. And I mean, where would you start in trying to say, no, look, there's got to be certain guidelines, rules?
Positive attention. Probably the biggest thing I've noticed, you know, when you're out and about seeing parents with their children, maybe everyone isn't as interested as I am, but the biggest thing I've noticed is parents not giving their children positive attention. So they're pretty much ignoring the child until the child does something wrong. The child is already about to jump off the chair, the couch, the high bar, and then they run in and say, no, don't do that, instead of earlier giving the child positive attention. Good climbing, Johnny, maybe you better not climb so high, or, you know, just being vigilant and giving positive attention.
Well, we've learned something about positive attention. Stephanie, wasn't there some recent research that you talked about the nature of positive attention?
Yes, at Columbia there was a psychologist or psychiatrist, and she found that if you praise children, just by saying, okay, you're very smart, you're very bright, that doesn't go far enough to get the kids to keep going and doing more. If you praise their effort, like, look at how you did your math homework, look at how you solved those problems, you really worked hard at that, that is the kind of praise that is more effective to get the child to keep going, as opposed to this blanket praising of you're bright, you're smart.
You know, very often parents, I hear parents talking to children and talking about how cute the child is, as if that means anything to a child. Oh, you're so cute. What are we saying? Get off on being cute, because that's all that you have. Whereas attention is different than, oh, you did so well in that play where you acted. You know, so I think commenting on a child's appearance kind of may not be such a good thing unless you're talking about something that is the way they put themselves together.
I think a good way to look at it is comment, give the child praise for what they have control over.
Good,
not
good
you're
point.
So beautiful, but you really, I like that outfit you picked out. You look very nice.
So give, if you're going to give compliments over something that the person has control over. You know, that's kind of interesting. If you think of it human to human, it's the same thing.
Yes.
You know, how often do you want to hear that you're pretty or that you're cute? You know, I guess you could never stop hearing enough of that. But it would be interesting if you could really have somebody commenting on something that you've done and the way you've put things together, commenting on abilities and things over which you have control, as opposed to things that are just there.
Right. And that's how you empower people, by helping them with where they are and getting better with the abilities that they have.
Well, you know, but if it sounds like it's so nice at your home that it's not so nice, huh?
Well, it's not a normal teenage life by any means, because we do have a lot of rules, a lot of structure. And
well, give me an example of some of your rules.
Our kids, these are teenagers, 10 to 18, but including 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, their bedtime is 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Lights out at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. That's because they get up at 5:30 to catch the school bus at 7. And we do not get complaints about lights out at 9 o'clock. The only complaint we ever got was, could we go to bed at 8:30 rather than 9 o'clock? And these are kids who were not going to school, who were staying up late, who were running the streets, partying with their friends, and they respond to that structure. So those are the kinds of rules. Our kids cannot leave the house that they're living in without staff permission. So they're under adult supervision 24/7.
And they are, so among the rules that they may be given is they're told exactly when they have to wake up, exactly when they have to go to school.
Yes.
They really have to follow these rules.
Right, and these are 16, 17-year-olds.
What are the penalties if they don't?
We try to use a lot of reasoning or logical consequences. Let's see. If they didn't go to bed, we probably would give them an earlier bedtime the next night. That kind of thing. Sometimes extra chores, but really it's a lot of reasoning and really when you have the rules in place and a girl comes in, it's a lot easier. And the way we present the rules is, this is how we do things here. And they pretty quickly see that a lot of those rules are in place to help them.
What kind of rules do you have around the kitchen?
The staff does the cooking. The girls can help in the kitchen, except for the girls that are preparing to live out on their own at age 18, those girls 17 and a half to 18, they do cook a meal once a week. They plan and cook the meal for the whole house so that they're getting that experience.
What about cleaning up after you? What do you do with your dishes?
There are chores. Each girl has a chore every night, and one girl's chore is the dishes. They also keep their bedrooms clean. Their bedrooms are cleaner than my kids' bedrooms ever were, and I love to take groups on tour because I don't tell anyone we're taking a tour. We just see the place as it would be any day, and the bedrooms are pretty clean.
So you must run into some child, some youth, who says, I'm not going to do it.
We don't. We don't ever have a girl who says, I'm not going to do anything, you can't make me. The kids always pick their battles, and then we work with them on that. Occasionally, maybe two or three times a year, we do have to ask for a child to be moved, but that's because of physical aggression, not defiance. Defiance is, you know, we're there for defiance, so we're kind of used to it.
And not only are you used to it, but when a parent deals with a defiant child, you have an adult dealing with a child, and the child feels that they're just being oppressed by these bigger person. But when you have the pressure of a group of children,
yes,
who are doing and saying, no, no, it's okay.
Exactly.
You know, it changes it quite a bit.
Yes.
I mean, I know, even though I know yours is a home for children who are wayward,
mm-hmm.
you know, yours would be a nice place to have a lot of people go to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like summer camp should be a week at your place.
Yeah, to shape your child up.
What do you think would happen to most of the, I mean, don't you must see an awful lot of.
Well, I think it helps kids tremendously because then they do sort of shape up and then they go back into their home. If we're talking about what would be a more functional home, if they went back into a functional home, they would function very well there because it would be not all the rules we have, but they learned from those rules some skills that they can use.
It's kind of amazing. But Barbara, do you think there's any way that parents or people who are uncles or aunts or guardians of children who are troubled teenagers, could they get their kids into your homes?
I guess they could.
Does the kid have to rob a bank?
The way it works financially is that typically we would take private placements. Either the person's family would have to pay, or our girls, the county who is placing them pays because they're placed through the probation department or the Office of Children's Services.
So somebody could literally send their child, if it's private placement, to your place.
Yes.
this could start a trend, because I tell you, it sounds like it could mean a great deal. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then right back with Barbara Jessen and Stephanie Domra talking about troubled teens. Sweet, that's Ramsey Lewis, of all things, an old tune called 1, 2, 3. Good bass, good bass. Hear that bass working like Michael Jessen or Cricket Cohen would be playing. Ole, my friends. Hey, listen, this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. I've got in the studio with me Barbara Jessen, Stephanie Domra. Stephanie, I wanted to ask you something. You and I were doing some research about the circadian rhythms of youth. I like to call them youth.
Youth.
Youth, Y-O-U-F-F. Youth. Yes, what about circadian rhythms, and what is it that we're learning about circadian rhythms? We're beginning to understand that we're making a mistake.
Well, the research has pointed out, Armand, that teenagers need about 9.5 hours of sleep, but they only get 7 hours. And what they found in this research was that we've talked about this melatonin, which is that enzyme or neurotransmitter that gets us sleepy at night. As soon as the lights go out, the melatonin increases, makes us sleepy. Kids and teenagers are waking up way too early, according to the research. And even at 8 o'clock in the morning, when they're already in high school, their body is still producing this melatonin, so they're sleepy. So what they found is that some school districts have now increased or delayed school start times by an hour so that kids go to school later when they're teenagers. And as a result, Their scores on SATs have increased by 100 points, their grades improve, and by sleeping longer and getting up later, they improve their overall school performance.
Well, that's kind of amazing. You mean people in schools have to go to... let me ask. I know. I've got somebody here. Hold on a second. Hold on a second, young man. Can I ask you a question? We got Brian Jessen in here who happens to be standing by. Brian, what time do you go to school in the morning?
Usually school starts around 7:30.
7:30. And what's your first class?
It's chemistry.
Chemistry, 7:30. Are you awake at 7:30?
Not entirely.
So it's 7:30 in the morning. You're there with your blow-up materials, right? You're going to be mixing this stuff that's explosive and stuff, and you're not entirely awake. What time do you have to wake up to get to school by 7:30?
Usually I wake up at about 5:15-ish.
5:15-ish?
Yeah.
5:15-ish.
Yeah.
What's happened to this world? And then you're done by 2:30. What else could you do at 2:30? You got to do drugs, and what else are you going to do?
Blow stuff up, I guess.
And blow stuff up.
Drink.
Drink? That's right.
Speed.
That's right. What is it? I didn't hear the last one.
Speed.
Drink, do speed. 2:30 in the afternoon, you're done. And in most rhythms, Stephanie, what we're learning is that it's at that time... You just are waking up. You're kind of waking up around when? 12 o'clock? When's the...
Well, I know many teenagers that can sleep till 12 o'clock easily. But most kids I know in the Northeast, I don't know about where you all live in Indiana, but in the Northeast, kids are doing homework till 12 o'clock. And some kids talk on the phone, on their cell phones, and they talk and do their stuff on the computer, but they're doing schoolwork because there's so many activities they're involved in. So they don't get to schoolwork until 10 o'clock at night.
So we're lucky teens. We keep talking about lucky teens, but in the Northeast, lucky teens who are involved in all these school things are sleeping like 5 hours a night.
Yes.
And they're lacking in melatonin, which is why my name is Armand de Melatonin. Okay, so Barbara, but in your town, they go to sleep early because they're more sensible.
At our homes.
What do they do? Because they can't stay up and watch television, right?
Right, right.
Because your TVs have an enormous range of what?
4 channels. We don't have cable. We have TVs in each home, but we don't have cable. So whatever they can get, which is 4 or 5 channels, is what they get.
How much access do they have to the computers?
They have access to the Internet only in the study building when the licensed teacher is there with them. So it's pretty much for homework. The Internet is for homework, but we're thinking, we do have one home to prepare the girls who are going to live out on their own, and they have to be 17 and a half to be in that home. We're probably going to put the Internet in there, and they can do MySpace and that kind of thing in there. You know, we're trying to be real world about it, too, and that's real world.
How do you stand
teenagers.
For computers? How many computers do you have? Did we have a donation given by Apple?
No. We purchased a couple for the girls to use.
And you could use more?
Absolutely.
All right. So if people wanted to give computers to your home, which I think is a wonderful project, how would they do it?
Probably the best thing is to call me, and the number is 812-479-7535. Or if they have any questions or any assistance they want to provide, that number again is 812-479-7535.
You're doing awful good work over there, but I know the calls you're going to get. You know, you're going to be the teen whisperer. You know, they're going to call you.
That would be a good thing.
You know, I mean, just be able to say, Barbara, come on and help me with this. What do you see?
Well, we were talking about how to help kids, and another thought occurred to me, which is I don't want to make it sound like the facility I'm running is a prison with prison guards and all these rules. There are lots of parts to it. And another part is how we talk to the girls that we have there. And we try to do it as a kind of mutual problem solving, not dictating to them, you will do this, you will not do that. But when we do have girls that are having difficulty with some of our rules, we talk to them about not only what our expectations are, but why we have those expectations. With the circadian rhythms, we have girls who want to take naps in the afternoon. And my explanation to them is, I'm really reluctant to let you take naps because that will make it harder for you to go to sleep when you need to go to sleep at night. And the girls accept that. So I don't want to make it sound like we have rigid rules and it's take it or leave it. We try to explain and have rules that are meaningful.
But, you know, we may be learning that very thing about not letting them take naps is really a crime. That maybe they should take the naps so that they go to sleep a little later, because what we're forcing them into is an unusual rhythm. So how do you lay down a rule that says this is good for the society, for the school, even though it may not be good for you?
Yeah, that might be something to consider. Maybe they would get more sleep in the long run if they took a two-hour nap and went to bed a little bit later. So that's
Imagine,
something to consider.
What could we call a two-hour nap in the afternoon? Let's give it a name, something like siesta. What an invention. What a creation.
It might work.
I mean, there are parts of the world where people nap mid-afternoon on purpose, right?
Yes.
Not such a bad idea. We may learn something. But there are times that you have to do something with a child that is kind of just enforcing it for your comfort.
Yes.
You know, and it's for your comfort. Barbara says, I don't want you running all over the house because I am uncomfortable, because I can't sit and relax, because when I'm sitting and relaxing, when I hear you jumping all over, I get tense. That doesn't mean you're wrong for running around the house. It just means I don't want you to run around the house because I get nervous. I mean, do you ever communicate that way?
That's a good point. And there's another teaching going on, which is mutuality. We do nice things for other people, and they do nice things for us. And we're all living here together, and let's help each other out.
And it doesn't have to make sense to you
right. Why
I'm doing this
right. Or
why I'm enforcing this. But I will tell you, I am personally uncomfortable. See, I think that's what most parents don't do. They don't report from their own emotions and their
right.
own frailties. When you go out at night and you come back too late, I get worried, and I stay up worrying about you. And since I don't want to worry about you, I want you to report in at this hour.
Right.
It's not that you should or you're a bad person. It's like, if you're going to live with me, this is what I want for my comfort.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right about that.
Do you and your staff talk in those terms of these are the rules we use to keep the home going rather than what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't have anybody in the home who's saying you have to wash yourself because you smell filthy?
Sometimes.
Who would be saying that? Would that
the
be?
Staff might be saying that to a girl, not quite that boldly, but we do have girls who have poor hygiene, and sometimes they need a lot of help with it.
Being told that they have to wash because they don't smell good.
Yes.
But you won't use a word like disgusting.
No.
No, you are not. You
body
are
odor. You have a bad body odor, and here's the solution.
Boy, that must be something, teaching young teenage girls about body
odor. Or older. I'm thinking of a 17-year-old that came in that had bad body odor and had not, apparently, not ever been taught how to bathe herself and how often and how to wash her hair and how often.
Are there any places we have more difficulty than other areas in teaching young girls who have been brought up with their own ideas? Because, I mean, the way I figure it, it's like eventually if you don't have the parenting, you make up in your mind what you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to be. And you do these kind of you make up rules in your own mind about how to live. You know, like never trust anybody becomes a rule.
Yes.
Never let anybody hold your cheese is another rule. You know, never let anybody. Now, there are rules that you make up.
Oh, sure.
You figure things out.
Right.
And it's rules that we make up for survival because we don't have anybody teaching us any different. What are some of the hard, fast rules that people come in with that you find the greatest difficulty?
Well, the never trust anybody. You hit the nail right on the head there. If they come in with never trust anybody, they have a pretty big wall around themselves that's hard to penetrate. But if they're there long enough, often we're able to do that just by the care we provide.
You don't punish them until they trust you.
Well, I wouldn't put it like that. But we do a lot of caring. We're feeding them. We're giving them toothpaste and shampoo and driving them places and taking care of them.
Yours is an invitation to trust.
Yes.
Yeah, when I was kidding when I said that, you don't punish them into trusting, because that's what kind of parents do. You know, if the child is wary, they kind of beat the wariness out of a child. It's like, I'll break your spirit. It's almost like I have you and you're a wild horse, and I'll break the horse.
Yeah, and
rather than, you know, I'll invite the horse to join me.
Yeah, breaking wouldn't work.
You break the spirit. How about deep emotional crisis? How about psychological crisis?
Kids often have depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. They've been through a lot in their lives, not just neglect, but abuse. And so they have, bipolar disorder, attention deficit, you know, everything we've mentioned, anxiety, often lots and lots of anxiety.
You said when you have a young person who is you're trying to introduce a new concept to, it will increase their anxiety. Is that what you said before?
Sometimes, or new situations.
An example of that.
Well, I was at my son's high school play, and I was thinking, some of our girls go to that high school, and I was thinking it would have been neat for us to take them to the play, but sometimes when we take them into new situations like that, some of the girls act out, and I think anxiety is underlying that, because they're in new situations and they don't know how to conduct themselves, and it's a little bit scary to be in those new situations. So we're a little bit cautious. We want to have them experience new things like school activities or community activities, but we have to be a little bit cautious because some of them act out, and I think it's due to anxiety.
When you say acting out, could you describe what that
loud,
is?
They get loud, noisy, disobedient, catcalling at males across the room, and that kind of thing that just even high school kids don't even do. You know, high school kids admire each other, but they don't yell across the room things to that person. So our girls sometimes act out in those ways.
So there's kind of a defiance that comes up when a person is brought into a new situation. A new situation could be something that could be perfectly good for them. You know, it could be like a most wonderful thing, like we're going to bring you to a spa where you're going to have wonderful experience, you know.
Exactly.
And they'll, because of the discomfort, because you're now considering that they're moving to a different environment, and an environment, even if it sounds like a wonderful environment, like if they went to Disneyland, they could wind up creating a great deal of chaos because of the anxiety that comes with being in a situation that, even though it's wonderful, is new.
Right. Right. And I think that's where we get into the youth whisper idea, where if you understand what is going on, it's not just a kid being bad, but there might be a reason for that. And if we help them with the reason, then we're more likely to help them through that situation.
So if you saw a teenage, two teenage girls who were suddenly brought to a school play and they started catcalling, right, would you go shh? Or would you walk over and put your hands on them and just gently talk to them?
What we would do is, before we even go to the play, before we go to the play, we would explain, here's what you do at a play. Here's our, we could call them our rules. Kids love rules, by the way, so calling them our rules isn't off-putting at all. So we can say, here's the rules for the play. And they want to know the rules. They don't want to draw attention to negative attention to themselves. So that's what we would do first. Here's what it's going to be like. Here's how you can be successful there. Here's what I need you to do. And then if they're still acting up, ultimately remove them from the situation. I'm sorry, we have to leave because that's not how we are going to act here.
So do you think at any point, if you see somebody understanding that they're anxious, and understanding that they're having an anxiety reaction, and you just put yourself in their presence. I'm going back to Caesar. This is from The Dog Whisperer. Sometimes he just makes himself present among the chaos, and he just shows his calm in there, you
sure.
know?
Sure. And we have staff that does that, not all staff and not the majority of staff, but there are certain staff that will have many fewer problems in a new situation just because they're there, and the kids are secure with them and know what to expect and know they'll be taken care of. So absolutely, same situation.
Rules are a funny thing. You know, rules, if you grow up without rules, why would you welcome rules? It would seem like rules would be a very hard thing to follow, but rules are love.
And people who grew up with rules are not successful, and they know it. They're struggling. It's like not knowing how to swim. And if you know how to swim, you're successful.
If you know what the rules are. So this would assume, this would mean that many children are in this world without guidance who can't figure out the rules of life.
And how to be successful, and they're very startled or taken aback that they're not successful. They see themselves getting into trouble all the time, and they don't understand what's going on.
You know, Stephanie, I know you share with me the wisdom that every now and then we see patients, adults, who come in to see us who are always getting themselves in trouble. And they get themselves in trouble because they absolutely don't understand the rules. I have one person I know who's always getting people very angry at her. And the people always get angry at her. She, no matter who she ever works with, within 6 months, that person never wants to talk to her again. Because she's got a condition that looks like a borderline condition, but the idea is she doesn't understand the rule of the game. The rules of the game is you do not scream at people. You know, you don't get them on a phone and keep screaming at her. I remember she had car trouble once, and she was screaming at the attendants. And what the attendants did was they walked away from her. She was stuck for 10 hours with a car in a garage because nobody would talk to her. She thought she was the victim of these people because she didn't understand. There are social rules. There are rules of this world that are not rules that are put down arbitrarily to punish, but rules of getting along.
Exactly.
And I think young people try to figure out what are the real rules, not just what you say, Mom, but what are the real rules of life. So now that kind of child comes to your home, as a child comes to your home, and they get a sense that the rules make sense.
Yes.
Oh, okay, so here's a rule. And a rule is a form of love, because that's what I think parents are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Parents miss the discipline, the rules, you know. And I know, Stephanie, I know the way you bring up your children. You've got a certain, it's not hard and fast rules, just that you will not allow them to stray too far from what you believe in.
Well, it also points out to this development of the child's brain. Armand, we've studied so much about the brain. I believe that if a child doesn't have the ability to reason, to make decisions, going back to the brain research, they don't have that prefrontal cortex developed until age 25. It's that ability to make the decisions, not be impulsive. So parents have to feel that it's okay to help them make their decisions. They're not always going to make the best decisions, but if you consistently show your kids how to practice making decisions, things develop in the brain. It's just like practicing a violin over and over again. It develops parts of the brain just like a decision practicing.
Thank you. So it's like working out emotions and working out thinking is a form of exercise, much like we would tell the kid, go do your calisthenics, you know, or whatever we tell kids to do nowadays. Listen, this is wonderful. I'm sure we could go on forever, and I'm sure I could apply this everywhere. My guest, my special guest, Barbara Jessen. Now, I am sure many of you are going to want to take this program and have somebody else hear it because you know of troubled teenagers or you know of people who have teens that are, you know, they're having children with difficulties. So you can do that by going to the website, thepositivemind.com, and getting this recent programs. You could re-listen to it. You could send it to somebody. Also, if you want to contact Barbara, Barbara, do you have an email address?
Yes, it is bjessen@umyh.com.
U-M-Y-H. That's the United Methodist.
Youth Home.
Youth Home.
Yes, that's what it stands for.
.com. And
yes.
Or you could send me an email and I'll forward it on to Barbara as well.
Great.
It's been beautiful. It's been beautiful. I wish we could do more. You know, in fact, we will do more. My friends, I will be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about something interesting. Roberta Atti and I are doing research on where fraud comes from in humans. We're going to get the original tracings going all the way back in time, and we're going to be learning about why people are so secretive and hiding and lie so much, because it's a natural way of being. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Barbara, thank you so much.
You're very
Stephanie,
welcome.
Thank you also.
And
Brian, thank you so much for being here. Go ahead, I can hear you.
You're...